From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
There was a word used by the speaker throughout since the end of May. We have to act in moderation. And there have been attempts, genuine good faith attempts to do so. And we find still we're at this process of doing gotcha votes for political reasons.
Reasonable is an objective, having sound judgment, fair and sensible. Extreme can also be an adjective, furthest from the center or a given point. We've heard that over and over this summer. Let's be reasonable and not work in the extreme.
It's possible to solve this problem if people are not functioning in the extreme. We have to function in moderation. Everybody has to be reasonable. Now, I heard a lot of Republicans in floor debate today talking about not being in the extreme. So apparently, they're listening to somebody. Apparently, that message is penetrating them. So that's good.
No one bears more responsibility today for the defeat of this legislation than Representative Ken Duncan.
We got a breakthrough in two different areas, and I'm ecstatic that the governor kept his word and that we got the funding back in the budget for those two items.
Well, a certain Democratic lawmaker from Chicago getting publicity for his new alliance with the Republican governor, and it's taken away a key vote for House Democrats on a couple of measures. That is Ken Duncan. And before that, we heard Republicans and Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan talking about moderation. We'll try to discuss both in moderation on this week's State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, and our State Capitol Bureau, Brian Mackey with WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, and Mike Riopel, State Government Editor for the Daily Herald. Mike, thanks for coming up from the coffee shop to join us.
Thank you, Bill.
And in Chicago, Amanda Venicky speaking to us remotely. She's State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and IPR. Hello, Amanda.
Hey, Bill.
Well, she's in Chicago now. She was in Springfield earlier in the week. And Ken Duncan, a representative from Chicago, seems to be making a name for himself a little bit. He describes himself in one sense as kind of the negotiator. Right now, the link between the Republican, the governor, and the Democratic House Speaker, Michael Madigan. And the Democrats aren't looking necessarily so kindly at him because he's taken away he's been that one vote that they've needed a few times. Can you bring us up to speed with what's going on there?
Wow, yes. So Ken Duncan is maybe not known to most people outside of state government, although he is a kind of flashy guy. He likes to wear some bright ties and fancy suits and is just kind of a character, is how I have described him as a legislator. I think that's something he'd be proud of. In this case, though, making a name for himself, as you said, Bill, to Democrats, it's almost as if he's being a traitor. You may recall his name from early September when he was at a conference in New York and did not come back, although one of his fellow Democratic colleagues did take an initial try at a vote regarding child care that would basically disallow Governor Bruce Rauner from making cuts that he already made to a program that helps low-income families pay to send their kids to be taken care of while they're at work or while they're at school. And Duncan at that time wasn't there. And so remember, there are 71 Democrats. If Republicans all stick together, as pretty much by and large they have, then you would need all Democrats to vote to pass that legislation. Duncan wasn't there for it then. This time he was actually in Springfield, but both for that vote and for another one regarding the determination of need. It's basically the state coming in and helping to pay for services for maybe somebody with Alzheimer's, an elderly individual, or somebody with disabilities to be able to stay in their home, perhaps nursing home care. Both of those, he didn't vote at all. all. And so, as you said, Bill, I mean, Duncan says he's a guy who's working with Rauner. These are compromises, and it will be seen as a link in this budget impasse. He says this is sets the possibility for future compromises going forward for a full year's budget. But Democrats say, who are you? You're breaking ranks. And we asked House Speaker Michael Madigan about it, and not 100% clear that he's, you know, been written off by the speaker, but it sure looks as if it's heading that way.
And labor unions were criticizing Representative Duncan, and I presume they had supported him in the past.
So, yes, Ken Duncan, that was what we heard at the top there. It's, I actually had encountered him in the Capitol hallway where Duncan had had a meeting, and they said, you know, he held up a child and said, I'm going to be here to protect you. And they were carrying around pictures of that event and saying, you promised. The SEIU members, these are daycare providers.
He had signed like a pledge form for SEIU saying, I will support this. Yeah, exactly.
And so they'd confronted him in a hallway and said, what are you doing? You're leaving us behind. We want a guarantee. Duncan says, and so this is one of those things. It really is hard. What you had is this legislation that would have stripped the governor from being able to basically use rules, because there was never legislation that passed the General Assembly to cut so drastically what Illinois pays for when it comes to this child care subsidy. He'd reduced it. So basically, if you were making the minimum wage full time, that was still too much money to be eligible for state-subsidized daycare services. He used rules to do it. So the legislation at hand would have taken that away, so reversed the cuts, and going forward, not allowed the governor to use rulemaking to change that. You'd have to pass a law in order to make those sort of cuts. And instead, what happened was Rauner saying, you know, hey, I compromised. I see the pain that was caused. I want to work together. So I'm going to, it's not fully up to where it was before, but it's nearly there. 70,000 people, basically families, have been cut off from childcare. Now 5,000.
So this conflict.
This is better. Go ahead, Mike.
Let me summarize this real fast to make sure I'm on board and then the listeners can follow along. This week, what essentially the governor agreed to do before the lawmakers came to town was reverse most
cuts
of the cuts
he had made.
He had made to child care and senior care. And then the legislature vote was designed to kind of cut his authority, neuter his authority on these issues, and would allow them to restore the cuts in a slightly different way, of which they needed a supermajority. And they fell one vote shy, and Mr. Duncan had been talking with Governor Rauner. Would that be a correct summary?
Totally.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's why he matters so much, is because the speaker needs every single one of his Democrats to override the governor and to get certain things passed right now. So when you lose one, that's a big problem. Now, there's talk about, will Representative Duncan have a primary opponent? Because, as Amanda said, people are upset with him. I think one important thing to remember is this conflict will continue because the primary's in March. General election is a year from now. You know, Representative Duncan still has a full year, you know, or more left on his term. So this is a conflict when we saw it play out a few months ago over a major labor piece of legislation. We said, well, this is important because this could keep happening. This conflict could keep happening. Now it's happened again, and who knows what will come up again now in the future that he may play a major part in.
I'd like to just take a moment, though, to push back against this idea that the governor has compromised and that he felt bad about all these kids being pushed onto child care. Mm-hmm. I mean, the governor set out earlier this year on a deliberate strategy to pressure Democrats by squeezing what you might call vulnerable populations, right? The working poor and their children through this program. And let's remember, the child care assistance program started out as kind of a Republican and Democratic idea back in the 90s as we were moving away from direct public assistance, just paying people. The idea was make them work, but if we're going to make them work, then we'll at least help them pay for child care. And the amount of money that the governor had cut back the program to, you could work at minimum wage for 20 hours a week, which is not a great deal of money. Now it's going to be something like a full week at $15 an hour under the change. So the governor sets out on this strategy. He's talked in the past about using this as a wedge issue, the idea of you know, you get Democrats who want to fund social services. Well, let's make them vote to weaken AFSCME, which the governor refers to as AFSCME, or weaken SEIU, the Service Employees International Union, which represents these child care workers and home care workers who take care of the elderly and disabled. So the governor makes these cuts, and instead of, you know, the narrative being, well, some moderate Republicans, as there's been reporting this week, went to the governor and said, look, you need to back off of this. Instead, now we're all talking about Representative Ken Duncan and not the governor's decision to back off of his strategy of trying to squeeze the Democrats into anti-union votes.
Well, whether if he's backing off, isn't that the same as though he's giving some ground that would,
well,
in turn,
I would look at it
to somebody legitimate. Seem like maybe... maybe he's easing up on that area, so isn't that a good thing?
I
would look at it that he's kind of growing into the job. I think I agree with Brian. This focus on Duncan is irrelevant because what moved Rauner, it wasn't that Ken Duncan came and negotiated on behalf of...
But Ken Duncan says he is, isn't
he? Well, but that's Ken Duncan.
He's a legend in his own mind.
But what it really was is... Rauner heard from Republicans who said, this is really hurting people in our district. Now, we're trying to toe the line. We're trying to be good minions to you. But we can't go along with this. And you have to back off this because it's causing real damage to real people. And we don't want to be associated with that. And the concern for Rauner was that had he not backed off, there would have been Republicans who probably voted to make both of those pieces of legislation law. And so he's able to, and to put it in, I guess, a favorable light for him, he's somebody who came into the job, used to giving orders, people would do whatever he said. Now he realizes, he's starting to realize he doesn't have that power anymore. He heads most of one branch of government. He has to deal with a co-equal branch. And some of his friends in the co-equal branch are saying, Governor, you have to kind of grow into the job. You have to realize that there's give and take. You can't just say it's my way or the highway. And to his credit, he's backed off on these cuts. He's the one who caused the pain. He's now changing. He's reversing his hard-line position. And I would prefer to look at it as maybe this is progress.
So that's, I think, kind of the big question. Is this progress? Is this compromise? Or is this basically the governor capitulating because he had no other choice, because otherwise he would have looked like the loser in this situation? This way, he can frame himself as somebody who's reaching out. And it seems as if his office is making pretty major efforts to try and frame him as somebody who's ready and willing to compromise, and House Speaker Michael Madigan as somebody who isn't. And we're seeing more and more of that. It's both on these votes as well as another vote that did actually pass after Republicans have for a long time now said that they're against any sort of piecemeal budgeting. Rauner agreed. He said, OK, we're seeing again the pain from municipalities not being able to, you know, buy road salt ahead of winter. 911 dispatch centers are waiting for their money. All of this is not from the general fund. It's money that technically the state has because, you know, it's paid. It's brought to the state through other means. So let's spend it. Let's allocate that cash. All the Republicans voted for it, and as did the Democrats. So that passed the House. Now, however, House Majority Leader, a Democrat, Barbara Flynn Curry, has put what's called a motion to reconsider. Basically, she's put a hold on it. And you're getting a lot of attention. Republicans saying, look at this. We came together, we compromised, and now the House won't even let it loose. Of course, the Senate isn't even supposed to be back. So it couldn't go, whether or not it goes to the Senate now or whenever, doesn't quite matter. Because unless the Senate is called back to Springfield, they're not set to be there until January anyway.
So what do you think the game plan is? Why... did they pull that move to hold on to the legislation, even though it, as you mentioned, doesn't matter for a month, so they could release it very well at that time? Is there something still in the works?
Someone had suggested to me, well, one reason to put this hold on it is so somebody else doesn't, so that you have control. It's all about control and power, and that you've had this vote showing that you can get it done. And now if the Senate was available to come back, and they, you know, might be, then you can release and it would be no big deal. Amanda mentions these 3 days. It was also suggested to me that through you know, putting the say all the same plans and language onto a bill that could be considered more quickly and be sent to the Senate more quickly might be part of the plan too. So there are all kinds of procedural hocus pocus that could get it done faster that might still be in the works. But certainly what Amanda brings up raises a lot of questions at a time we're talking about, is there more compromise? You have another hurdle thrown up, another thing that raises questions about what's really going on.
And so many efforts on both sides to frame themselves as the compromiser and the better one. I mean, just so much of this. It's the hocus pocus and the procedure and all of the entities that are waiting for the money and are, they say, suffering because they don't have it and the uncertainty. And at the same time, this extra layer of just posturing really on both sides and trying to make this a public win.
Now, I'm reminded of that phrase. I was just saying, I'm reminded of that phrase, and I can't remember, maybe Charlie or somebody else can point out where the origin of this is. But
just attribute it to Yogi Berra. Either
okay, Yogi Berra said, you know, the great politicians say, I need to find out where my people are going so I can lead them. And I think that we're seeing that somewhat with the governor here, which is the mayors around the state have really been pressuring lawmakers, and not just Democrats, but Republican lawmakers, just as the human service providers, the people who care for the elderly and the nursing homes, owners and the childcare people. Those are in every district. There are old people and children in every district in Illinois, and there's been a lot, and mayors and municipalities in every district, and there's been a lot of pressure on legislators. And I think that you're seeing, this is another example of where the governor kind of, you know, pulls off a brick, is a phrase that's been used around here a lot this year, or just, you know, says, okay, I'm going to get out of the way so that I don't have to wear the jacket on being defeated on this. One aspect that I've been a little intrigued about is why the speaker, who normally we think of as some great chess master, is allowing these votes to happen. You know, what is his strategy? Obviously, he must have some idea where he thinks it's a good idea, but he's not one to be known to allow egg to be splashed onto his face. He might just block a vote if he thinks it's going to go down and make him look bad. So that's been an intriguing.
One reason might be there are now roll calls in which Republicans have voted in a way that would allow a Democratic challenger to say, you voted against low-income working families getting subsidized child care. You voted against making sure that frail seniors have the kind of services they need to keep them at home and out of more expensive nursing home settings.
That's something that Representative or House Republican Leader Jim Durkin said this week, right? This is all about mail pieces. This is trying to get bad votes.
Was that Representative Sandak at the onset talking about the gotcha votes?
There was a question in the news conference with both Republican Leader Durkin and Senate Leader Christine Redonia. How many of these do you need, though? I mean, there have been, 16 now votes on the property tax freeze? It seems like we've had more than enough votes if your goal is to make Republicans look bad in mailers. I think we can, you know, fully fund the United States Postal Service out of Illinois for the next couple of years now.
If the mailer says Representative Wheeler voted against the best interests of families 15 times, it's not any more damning than he voted against the best interests of families 17 times.
Well, although I've seen it done, and it may have been close to 20 years ago, where daily in every committee such a vote was being taken, so you would be able to say they just went hundreds of times against legislation.
That's been the game for eons.
Right.
That I don't think was what it was about in this particular situation. I mean, we saw Madigan in a press conference with advocates, with SEIU members, daycare providers, with folks from the disability community. And that was, I think, what it was. It's also satisfying those constituencies who were pressing for this legislation. And further, had he not called it, it would have been, okay, we have a compromise, we're working with the governor, but they still wanted it. They said they don't trust because the governor has gone back and forth so many times, and this was the argument as well by Democrats. So that they wanted to enshrine this in law because they didn't believe that necessarily an agreement now would be an agreement going forward. So it's both, number one, the trust issue, number two, satisfying those constituencies, and number three, I think also perhaps testing Ken Duncan, you know, if in fact there is a primary primary opponent if we do see the House Speaker and the Democratic organization no longer support him. There needs to be some pretty good darn reasons why. And that's kind of how it just works, because members want to feel as if their leader has their back going forward. And this is one of them. And I think further, it was also a lot of Democrats wanted these votes to be held. Again, Esther Golar had, from her deathbed, really made a vote last time that there was an attempt with this child care situation in early September. And there's some true frustration by Duncan's colleagues that they kind of see him as having left them out to dry, and that they believe her legacy was betrayed. Duncan says that that's not fair to her legacy and to pull her into politics. But from what we hear in terms of how caucus went, and it's frustration with Democrats, and they wanted to see what was Duncan going to do.
Now, something else in the past week, or it might have been last week, the governor's office did announce that they'd reached a tentative agreement, he and some groups, on some legislation, and I can't recall, but it was something.
Unemployment insurance.
On unemployment insurance. So that would appear that labor and the governor, and that would appear that somewhere a Democrat was involved in talking about that issue, and I don't think it was just Ken Duncan.
Well, that's a situation that is kind of, what would you say, it's like deja vu all over again, to quote Yogi Berra, in that that's the way these kinds of issues historically have been resolved. Things like unemployment insurance, workers' compensation, representatives of the business community, representatives of organized labor would work. They would hash these things out. The governor's office would be there to facilitate, but by and large, there's nobody in the governor's office, in any governor's office, who has the in-depth knowledge on these issues that the experts on the business side, the experts on the union side do. And now the two sides would reach some agreement, and the legislature would rubber stamp it. And that appears to be what's going to happen here. The legislation will be introduced. It will get overwhelming support in both chambers. It will be signed into law, and it'll be, in my mind, a victory for the way government ought to operate.
Now this particular unemployment insurance negotiation is being held up when talking about this big budget meeting that's supposed to happen next week. It's supposed to be some public meeting between the governor and the four legislative leaders. And business groups sent a letter that said, look, we worked out this thing in private, got it done. Maybe this public meeting shouldn't be public. Maybe it should be private so it doesn't become a media spectacle and ruin everything. Who knows what will eventually happen. I don't think there have been many details set forward of this particular meeting, but the anticipation of it just continues to build toward spectacle, I would say.
Well, and in fact, unless I'm mistaken, we don't even know what's going to happen yet, whether it's going to be in Chicago or in Springfield.
That's my understanding as well.
Yeah, and the governor, as far as I, at least as we're taping this, has not, you know, said whether he would relinquish his absolute control over the agenda and compromise with, you know, either the good government groups that tried to promote having this meeting in the first place, or the Democratic leaders in the legislature, or whether it would just be the governor's agenda. We actually asked the speaker at a news conference this week about, you know, why are you having this meeting in public? Nothing gets done in public here in Springfield. At least as long as I've been covering it, it's always closed door meetings where the things really get done. And, you know, it's kind of an odd position for a reporter to be in to say, look, please go into those smoke filled back rooms and cut a deal. You know, we're supposed to want openness, but it's like, that's the only way things usually get done here in Springfield. And the speaker, what his response was, look, we've had those closed door meetings in the past and nothing was getting done there, so we thought we'd try something different. Of course, the speaker himself has not yet fully committed to going to this meeting, depending on who sets the agenda and how that works out.
Well, I think it would be helpful if everyone who was there would say, here are the things that I really care about, and here's why. And then after everybody makes like this public presentation with specifics, then they go behind closed doors and figure out how they can find middle ground.
That'd be great. You know, Amanda, you said the speaker seemed like he was, from being a little too much of a Kremlinologist when it comes to trying to read between the lines of what the speaker says, but he said he's excited about the meeting and looking forward to it, but I never really fully felt like he just said, yes, I will go. He's like, we have to see how, you know, what the agenda, we don't know yet what the agenda is going to be.
Now, Amanda, you this week also mentioned that the groups that originally wrote that letter asking for them to have the meeting, of which they all so lovingly, the legislative leaders and the governors so quickly said yes to, they would like to be a little more light for them just on the information heading into this budget negotiation session as well.
You know, it has been interesting because I've been calling the governor's office and trying to say, okay, what's happening here? This meeting is scheduled to take place Wednesday. As we noted, there's been no firm location, Springfield or Chicago at all. The initial letter that these reform quote-unquote group, so the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform was really the one that spearheaded the effort, sent a letter. The governor said, yes, I'll do this. I'm going to take it from here. I'll do the agenda. That set another round of kind of quibbling and another saying, well, wait, the governor's office setting an agenda, maybe that's not the best path. Clearly, there is a dispute on the budget, on all of these things. Maybe the agenda needs to be set by everybody instead. We haven't heard anything since then. And so then, again, this week on Tuesday, the Reform Coalition sent a letter saying, hey, it's time for details. It was initially going to be live streamed. How is that going to work? Where exactly are the staffs going to be? What sort of preparation should we do? What are the topics going to be? The governor's office has offered no comment to that whatsoever when asked. Nope, they're not willing to say anything. So we don't know how this will be. Then came this letter from the business group saying, let's hold this in private. So there's really a whole lot of buildup to this one leaders meeting, which I think is the frustration on the part of the public. I mean, it's one meeting. Who says that there can only be one? It should be fairly easy for the governor and four other individuals, the Republican and Democratic heads of the House and Senate, to come together. They haven't done it since May. And we've spent so long talking about this on this show and in general. It's been months. That letter came out in October. And still, just minor, even these very basic details are lacking about how it's going to go.
We are just about out of time, so I want to get some notes from the field, but we need to go through them pretty fast. I'll start with you, Amanda.
I will bring up some changes that the governor's office, it really has been a busy week there, it did make some changes to the EDGE tax credit. That's a tax credit given to businesses. The Chicago Tribune and our former State House colleague Ray Long did a whole lot of work there showing that there wasn't a whole lot of accountability. And now going forward, supposedly businesses that create jobs maybe in one location in Illinois, but that means there are layoffs in another one, you won't be eligible for an EDGE tax credit then.
Mike Riopelle.
Well, the supporters of Republican presidential candidates are scurrying to try to get petition signatures to get their candidates on the ballot. And there's some suggestion, you know, in past years, if you don't meet all the requirements, there's a gentleman's agreement to not challenge each other. There's a lot of concern that some of these candidates might challenge each other and pose ballot access challenges to each other in the coming months. So they have to be done by January, and they're rushing to try to get those in.
And Brian Mackey in 20 seconds.
Yeah, I just want to note that there is finally appears to be a resolution to the Stephen Salida mess at the University of Illinois. This is a professor. He had applied for a job, gotten a job here, and then he made some disparaging, really kind of nasty tweets about Israel. And then they rescinded the job offer. There was a national outcry among university professors. He sued. He's getting $900,000 in a settlement from the University of Illinois.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Special thanks to Mike Riopelle of the Daily Herald for taking part. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. Production assistance for today's program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.